A Daily Dose of Luther is Good for the Soul. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a new devotional resource, Day by Day with Martin Luther. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040. Day by Day with Martin Luther costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Day by Day with Martin Luther.
It was really very humbling to even think that he would want to, you know, meet me or know me. And I put my hand out, and he reached and he grabbed it, and I hugged him, and he hugged me, and he said, "Thank you for your courage." He told me before he left, he said, "Stay strong." And that was a great encouragement. Just knowing that the Pope is on track, you know, with what we're doing and agreeing, you know, kind of validates everything.
That's the now famous Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis talking to ABC News about her private meeting with Pope Francis during his recent U.S. visit. You didn't hear about it at the time. The Vatican did not announce it until the Pope had left the country. There's probably a reason for that, and the press doesn't really know what to do with this. I mean, they were all on track to talk about the Pope, de-emphasizing the traditional concerns of conservative American Roman Catholics, abortion, family, marriage. They were writing those stories. They were printing those op-ed pieces. And then the Pope goes and meets with Kim Davis, and they just don't know what to do with the story. How is it being covered? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Matting will be our guest first on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to talk about media coverage of Pope Francis's U.S. visit, including that somewhat surreptitious meeting with Kim Davis. After a little while, we will review the movie Black Mass. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest. And then Greg Kokel joins us to respond to some recent statements made by Bill Nye the Science Guy and actress Whoopi Goldberg on the issue of abortion. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions and your comments, 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org, our Twitter address at issuesetc, and our comment line, 618-223-8382. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He joins us to talk about the media coverage of Pope Francis' U.S. visit. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here again.
Before we get to that Kim Davis meeting, did the Pope's visit weaken or reinforce the U.S. media's view of him?
Well, I think it did up until they found out about the Kim Davis meeting. I mean, in the sense that what we saw in the tsunami of coverage of this event. I mean, I was looking it up the other day. I think during the week of the Pope's visit, I think I wrote something like 15,000 words attempting to deal with the media coverage, and many of my colleagues at Get Religion were writing about papal issues as well. I think we saw, you know, once again, the basic template for how they view the Pope, which is the Pope is politically liberal, and the word political is the crucial thing there, and they see that primarily in the issues that he clearly came to America to discuss, which was he came here. I mean, I really think this Pope, when he looks at North America, really does view it through the lens of immigration as a primary moral, cultural issue. And, of course, that's something the U.S. bishops have been talking about for years. So they saw immigration, they saw environment, they saw social justice, and they saw him continuing to say the church can't afford to just kind of harp on people about doctrines. All of that they loved. Now, they also saw the theme of religious liberty. They didn't really see the Pope turn and stare at Barack Obama when he read the section about religious liberty in the White House speech. And I didn't see a whole lot of them really digging into that amazing passage in Philadelphia about the systems of tyranny that oppress religious liberty. I mean, there was some interesting material here, but you would have to say that the people who were very concerned about religious liberty were not ecstatic about the Pope's performance, but he had said nothing that hurt them. You know what I'm saying? It was a matter more of like what he wanted to emphasize. And they were intrigued with that event that got very little coverage, which was the Pope vanishing to go meet with the Little Sisters of the Poor during his stay in D.C. And you couldn't have picked a more symbolic group of Catholic activists or nuns, workers to meet with than the Little Sisters. Then again, you couldn't possibly have picked a more symbolic meeting than the one we didn't find out about until he was back in Rome, which was the, you know, well, the explosive, you know, issue of him meeting with Kim Davis. On the at Get Religion, I've written two posts now referring to this, looking at this from the Vatican's point of view. I don't think there's any question whatsoever why that meeting was so secret, so secretive. And that is, the Pope knew that if anything came out, the Pope or the people around him knew that if anything came out about his meeting with Kim Davis while he was on U.S. soil, that was like a nuclear weapon that was going to blow up his entire pastoral agenda of what he wanted to say and do related to families and other issues while he was here. There was going to be no other issue discussed while he was here if the Kim Davis thing had gotten out. This issue, the image I've continued to have fun using for the American media, a meeting with Kim Davis with its powerful connection of religious liberty with same-sex marriage issues, I've been saying that to the American press, for the most of the American press, especially in the Acela zone between Washington and New York, I've been calling that journalistic kryptonite. I mean, just once the kryptonite has been pulled out of the box, everything is dead.
So the best guess at the Vatican's reason for keeping this under wraps until he left the country, until Elvis had left the building, so to speak, was not to derail the overall purpose of the visit.
Right. And don't you agree? I mean, look at the media, the level of disdain and disappointment and even anger that we're seeing beginning to emerge now in some media responses to the Davis meeting. The clip you played of Davis, I don't think we know that Pope Francis completely agrees with every aspect of her agenda, whatever that means. What we do know, however, is what he said on the airplane flying back to Rome when he was clearly asked about Kim Davis, and he chose not to address Kim Davis at that time. I don't think he wanted to blow that press conference up. He said, you know, I can't possibly address all of the issues related to this. And he was asked very specifically, do you agree with government officials having some right of conscience, even when dealing with whether or not they should sign same-sex marriage certificates? He was clearly asked about Kim Davis. He said, I can't address all the issues, but yes, I believe in a concept of conscientious objection as a human right, and that the government on these issues doesn't have a right to say these people are right and these people are wrong. And even with government workers, because the ABC reporter doubled back and said, even government workers, he said, yes, if a government worker is a human person, they have rights. So he even restated that twice. So I thought it was extremely interesting and a sign that he had discussed this with American bishops or that his own team had researched it, that he used a very highly nuanced term within the history of American law, which was conscientious objection. I think conscientious objection is exactly the stream of legal rights and decisions that, say, moderates on this issue want to promote. I mean, these are people who know, we've written about this so much at Get Religion, this is the people that nobody's paying attention to in the press. There are people out there who know that the Supreme Court has ruled this issue is for now settled as law, So we should not get in the way of same-sex marriage for gay and lesbian citizens because the court has said they have that right. But does that mean that we can't apply a conscientious objection language to this case, as we have to many other issues involving government officials and citizens in general? The Pope used the right word, the right phrase, and to me that meant that clearly he had been discussing this with bishops while he was here.
There was a term used, I think you noted a Newsweek headline, that referred to this as his visit as kind of summarized as pastoral Pope. What does that term mean? What did that headline say?
Well, I think you're referring to the headline that I made a lot out of that was from the New York Times.
New York Times, then.
And it was a page one. Now, folks, if you're looking at the prime journalistic turf in the world, above the fold, New York Times, page one, Sunday, has got to be at the very top of the pecking order for turf in journalism in the world, anywhere, any medium. And this story ran above the fold, A1, Sunday New York Times, and the headline, "A Pastoral Pope Slipping Conservatives' Grasp." And in it, it talked about, and this is the template thing where we started, it talked about the fact that his whole compassionate tone, his emphasis on pastoral solutions to problems, etc., must have been severely disappointing to the culture war bishops that wanted to enforce doctrine, et cetera, et cetera. And thus, a pastoral, compassionate pope is a defeat for the Catholic doctrinal right. I thought it was an absolutely bizarre headline. The story even contained a phrase that undercut the headline. Down in the body of the story, it even noted that I almost said John Paul there for a second, that Francis had said nothing that really blatantly helped the left either, that he had not said a lot of things that would be seen as clear victories for the right, but that he had also done nothing whatsoever to help the cause of the religious left within the Catholic Church. Once again, we have to keep trying to parse what's political and what's religious and doctrinal when you're dealing with this pope or with the Catholic Church or the Orthodox Church or any ancient religious body. At one point in a Get Religion post, you know, I made the simple observation. They keep talking about immigration and social justice and the environment as liberal, liberal, liberal. And I made the point, what ancient doctrines of the church are hurt when you are pro-immigration, pro-environment, and even pro-death penalty or whatever? What crucial creedal or major doctrines of moral theology are hurt by the Pope's stands on those kinds of issues, especially social justice? And the answer, of course, is none. Those are all issues that the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church and others have been strong on for generations, for literally millennia. So we keep seeing the fact that the press can't find a way to use the right labels. And I think part of that is that they just see everything as political. That's something that you and I have talked about before.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of Pope Francis' visit to the U.S. when we come back. So they're admitting that he doesn't support their leftist causes, but they still consider him a step in the right direction. We'll be right back.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google Plus. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes with a Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press. There's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. classicalspecialneeds.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The congregation at Lake George Lutheran Chapel is a proud supporter of Issues Etc. We are located on the western shore of Lake George. With the lake in view, Jesus still teaches from the boat of his church, and the people sit, listen, and are fed by Christ himself through his holy ministry and instituted means of grace. Every Sunday, 9 a.m., set your course to 1540 West 800 North, Fremont, Indiana. Like us on Facebook at Lake George Lutheran and find out more at lakegeorgelutheran.org.
This is the day which the Lord has made.
Let us rejoice and be glad.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Better is one day in your courts.
Morning
than
chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Bless and preserve us.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the media's coverage of Pope Francis' visit to the U.S. Terry, before the break, I was trying to sort this out. So it sounds like the mainstream media will admit, at least in the body of the stories, that the Pope isn't actually out there supporting the causes of leftist Roman Catholicism or anything like that. But they still consider him a step in the right direction?
Yeah, he's not helping our enemies. Yeah, it's kind of the basic line there. But what this means, of course, is that they're not actually reading the man's writings. They're basing a lot of this on their own interpretations of a few sound bites, often ripped out of context, the most famous of which is, of course, the "Who am I to judge" quote, which I think you and I went over quite at length, and I wrote a column about for Universal on that recently. They've basically taken that quote, and that quote was used all through the papal visit. They've turned that quote into almost exactly the opposite of the doctrinal message that it was meant to convey, which leads to another point. And I continue on Twitter to try to point out that the New York Times has not corrected something that was in that article. I want to read this directly out of the New York Times. I think this is one of the most crucial mistakes I saw during the papal visit. The New York Times did a good job of getting a real, live, conservative cardinal to talk to them. I noticed it wasn't an American cardinal. I'm not sure they would talk to the New York Times at this point. But they got a real, live, German conservative cardinal to talk to them, and they proceeded to misquote him. Here is the paragraph. Cardinal Mueller is the person being quoted. And he said that, quote, "it's not possible," unquote, "for those who have violated church doctrine with regard to divorce, homosexuality, or abortion to be fully welcomed back into the church. It's not an academic doctrine, it's the Word of God." The key phrase again, "it's not possible for those who have violated church doctrine on divorce, homosexuality, and abortion to be welcomed, fully welcomed back into the church." What the heck? I mean, did the Times forget the very story they had covered like crazy just a few weeks earlier when the Pope gave priests the right to absolve sins related to abortion by women and men who've come to confession? I mean, don't they even remember what they covered 2 weeks earlier? That's an amazing statement. The church can't forgive sins on those three topics. This is a terrible misquote. And it also shows you kind of what at least some people at the New York Times, the author of the piece perhaps, and the editors that edited it, it shows you their severe misunderstanding of the Catholic Church or even the Christian Church in general's teachings on sin, repentance, and forgiveness. It's like they don't have a clue.
So let's talk a little bit about the reaction to Kim Davis' meeting, which was announced by the Vatican rather quietly after the Pope had left the country. We know, or we can take an educated guess as to why the Vatican did what they did. How has the media reacted?
Quietly. I mean, it didn't get screaming headlines. There has been some coverage, and I'm happy to say that some of the coverage, specifically in the New York Times and the Washington Post, by their professional religion writers, a lot of the coverage has been very calm, very low-key, and very factual. I'm waiting for the op-ed page pieces to start landing, and in some of the more liberal publications, they're already started, and it's just simply outrage. It basically is, you know, well, we thought we knew this guy. Obviously, we didn't. What's he doing in embracing basically hicks and bigots? That seems to be the basic approach. And it's going to be very interesting to see if the major liberal columnists, like, say, an E.J. Dionne, for example, a mainstream Catholic liberal at a powerful location like the Brookings Institute / Washington Post, it'll be interesting to see if he responds. Maybe even more important, let's see if Stephen Colbert does anything on CBS.
What is it about Kim Davis and her situation that makes it so intolerable for the press, who wants to love this Pope, to imagine the idea that he would meet with them, especially without their permission, but meet with her and at least give an impression of supporting her?
Well, I think it's fascinating that Kim Davis herself, just her, not the political and fundraising and Republican maelstrom that goes around her with Eye of the Tiger being played and all that stuff. When you actually listen to what the woman has said, both before and after she went to jail, Kim Davis herself, as Get Religion continues to point out, falls into an interesting category. She is not, no matter how what you read in the papers, she's not trying to prevent gay and lesbian citizens from getting marriage license. She's trying to say, we need laws that allow them to get those licenses without me being the person or the institution who signs my name on it as a sign of official endorsement. Now, that's a nuanced position, and that's not getting reported much. Instead, what we have here is she has become the living, breathing symbol of red zip code Bible Belt America who just can't handle gay people. I mean, that she's, you know, along with the folks that won't bake the cakes and whatever else, she is traditional opposition to gay rights incarnate. She is the top hick, you know, in America, the bona fide incarnate symbol of bigotry, when her actual political position is more nuanced and fits better with Democrats and Republicans in the Kentucky legislature, who, along with some other legislators, are saying, we're going to have laws that honor the consciences of two different sets of citizens in this case. And one is traditional religious believers, be they Christian, Orthodox, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, or whatever, who are not in a position of conscience to be able to use their authority to endorse this innovation offered by the state. They feel they have a conflict of interest that they must declare, and they're asking for their conflict of interest to be handled in a way similar to other conflicts of interest that public officials have all the time, and the state works out workarounds to where citizens are not hindered or hassled related to that. Davis continues to say over and over, I support the compromises being proposed to the Kentucky legislature that would do both of these things, that would honor the gay and lesbian citizens with marriage certificates and would allow me to not have to violate my religious conscience by endorsing them. So when you see what she's actually saying, which, by the way, is language that I think the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference would endorse, do you then see why I thought it was so important that the Pope, when he explained his reaction to this issue on the plane, specifically used the phrase conscientious objection for government officials? At that point, he's reacting to what Kim Davis is actually saying as opposed to the press coverage of her. Not to mention the fact that he apparently was reacting to her as a human being. And in a detail that I thought was very poignant, she also, both of her parents are Catholic. And here she is, a oneness Pentecostal, not even a Trinitarian Christian from one of the wilder of the Pentecostal sects. And trust me, a cardinal from Latin America would know a lot about Pentecostalism. This pope has made many public shows of affection or at least friendliness to the Pentecostal community. You'll probably remember some of those stories, including taping video messages of greetings to Pentecostal conferences here in America. This man understands Pentecostalism, and here's a woman who's not just a Pentecostal. She's a Pentecostal who's a former Catholic. And her parents are still Catholics. And he presents her with two rosaries for her parents. And apparently, eventually, official Vatican photographs of the meetings. Now, what would that mean to her Catholic parents?
I want to come back to the photograph issue near the end here, if we could, Terry. But let's talk about the other things the Pope was up to, which the press covered also. You said mountains of press coverage. He addressed a joint session of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
How was it reported? And what I've noted, at least from my very limited perspective, is no small amount of disappointment on the part of those who expected more from the Pope when he talked to our lawmakers.
Well, if there was one moment that most disappointed the Catholics who wanted strong, ringing statements on religious liberty, it's that he chose not to do it there. Now, part of that is that he knew he had an entire address coming in Philadelphia, standing in front of Independence Hall. Could you pick a more symbolic location to address that topic? But there were people who were disappointed in what he said at that location. Clearly, he thought that to the U.S. Congress, the primary issues he needed to discuss were primarily related to human personhood and immigration. At that point, the most important thing the press doesn't understand is that, and of course, he also made a big appeal on the death penalty, so let's link all those together. The defining passage of that speech was when he said that I'm here to talk about and to defend the rights of the human person at every stage of human development. Now, that was immediately taken as a language about abortion, which is, I'm sure, is how he intended it. We didn't hear as much discussion, perhaps, of what that might have to do with death with dignity and euthanasia. But he then unfolded that into a very strong discussion of the death penalty and the arms race. But the point I'm trying to make is, if you look back through that speech, every single thing that he said in that speech, with very few exceptions, is rooted in basic Catholic doctrines about the dignity of the human person at all stages of development. That's where he would put environment. In fact, in his now infamous encyclical on the environment, he linked the environment directly to abortion, showing exactly how cheap we think life is today. So I don't think a lot of people who covered that speech, and the coverage of the speech wasn't bad, it wasn't terribly deep. They didn't note the importance of the fact that the very same doctrines that they call conservative, when he applies it to abortion and euthanasia, they call the same doctrines liberal when he applies them to immigration and to the death penalty. Do you see the central defining irony of that?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of Pope Francis's U.S. visit. When we come back, what about his meeting with the president? Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado; St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri; Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri; Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana; Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee; and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, is brought to you in part today by Concordia University Wisconsin Online. Concordia University Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. You can find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University Online logo and enter the program code to waive your application fee. It's Issues is the program code that'll waive your application fee. It's lifelong Lutheran learning, issuesetc.org. Click Concordia University, Wisconsin online. We're discussing media coverage of Pope Francis's U.S. visit. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, what about the Pope's meeting with the president?
Wow, that was a long time ago. Very gracious, with the exception of the moment when he read the section on religious liberty. Apparently, he turned and looked straight at the president as he read those lines. The president didn't get a lot of press opportunities beyond that with the Pope. Vice President Biden did, which might be of some concern to Hillary Clinton. But no, the president, to his credit, played this whole thing pretty low-key. But the content of that speech, once again, dignity of the human person. I would say the same thing is true there at Congress, to some degree at the UN, and certainly then once again at Independence Hall. And then, of course, the entire visit ends with that amazing personal talk at the family conference, where he just literally sits his script aside and just talks, you know, about everything from brothers and sisters to mothers-in-laws to, you know, he just, it's like he went off. Someone called it Pope Francis Unchained. You know, when he starts ad-libbing, you really do see who he is. And those comments, I thought as I was listening to them and reading them later, that improvisational speech sounded like a man who had heard a lot of confessions when he was a priest about fights in families.
So what a picture emerges for you just of the man. What has been kind of the way we've been reading him is, if he sticks to his script, then he's safe. But the minute the script gets laid aside, he starts doing he starts to ad lib, and then he says things that the Vatican has to kind of say, okay, you need to understand the context that need explaining by those who handle him. Has a picture emerged that he's maybe a little more sophisticated than that in dealing with the press?
He's a very sophisticated man in his writings. I think it really hurts that most of the defining work for this pope is done by people in English language press, when clearly that's not the language in which he feels most comfortable. How precisely he's being translated from Spanish and Italian into English is another issue here. But I think to some degree we know that he's the same man that he was before he came here. He's a Jesuit. He's very clever. He loves debates. He loves arguments, and he's very comfortable with them. He's more comfortable with them than non-Jesuits would want him to be. That's just a trait of his order. That's how his mind works. In the long run, I think that's a strength. But where it isn't a strength is it makes it very easy to quote him out of context. And it's going to be interesting to see if the Kim Davis meeting, maybe to their credit, makes a lot of journalists say, maybe we didn't understand this man. Maybe we do need to read what he has actually said in the past about, for example, same-sex marriage, which in one memorable occasion in Argentina he said was a work of the devil, the work of the author of lies to attack the family. Maybe they now have to take a second look at this man. And we're about to get bombarded with it all over again, because we're headed straight out of this U.S. tour right into the second round of the Family Synod at the Vatican, where a lot of these issues are going to be back on the table.
Now, a couple things here. What do you make of the pro-life disappointment that he didn't actually say the words abortion as often as they wanted him to address that particular issue? Can it be that this guy thinks in a larger framework than American Catholics do when it comes to life?
Well, I don't know. I think to some degree he believes that the left has its mind made up, and that to some degree he's not helping the cause by pounding them on it. I think they were most disappointed that he didn't specifically bring up Planned Parenthood. Could you imagine the press coverage, though, if in the speech to Congress he had said, what are you doing funding Planned Parenthood? Can you imagine what the rest of the tour would have been like? I mean, that's the holy of holies. There is no more sacred institution to a lot of people in the press than Planned Parenthood. at this point, maybe we just have to say he's not Mother Teresa. I mean, he's not someone that when you aim the spotlight at him, standing right next to, like Mother Teresa standing next to Hillary Clinton, receiving the Congressional Medal of Honor, I believe was the occasion, and turning to Hillary Clinton and saying, don't kill the children, give them to me. But the press handled that by ignoring it. If you go onto YouTube or you go online, how many references will you find to that? Almost none. Maybe the Pope thought their mind was already made up there. When you look at what he has said about abortion, though, in his writings and in a lot of his symbolic actions, actually quite strong, but for whatever reason, he decided that he couldn't do that in America and have the rest of his tour work out.
He will probably forever be known as the selfie Pope. He's well known because people get to take pictures of him that are off the regular press junket, that are off of the Vatican, that don't come from Vatican pre-approved sources, things like that. And I think it's a symbol, if you allow me to opine a bit here, it's not just that he can interact with ordinary people and smile for the camera, he's accessible. Is that part of what the selfie Pope persona is about?
Well, yeah, to some degree. Sadly, it just says a lot about our culture right now. I mean, I saw lots of Catholics on Twitter who are really upset, you know, that the Pope, the leader of the Catholic Church, walks into a church sanctuary and the priests are holding up their iPhones to take photographs of him as he marches by. I mean, like, is this the time and the place? I mean, do we really have to have a selfie for events that happen in life to have any meaning? If you're going around to the Kim Davis lack of a selfie, I found that in a very interesting way kind of poignant. She was asked not to take a selfie, especially kind of to help observe this cyber silence to let the Pope get safely out of America without being ambushed. Maybe Kim Davis was the only person in all of Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and New York City who didn't take out a smartphone and snap shots of this guy like crazy. And from my perspective as an old fogey, that's in her credit.
Well, I'm kind of intrigued by the first thing you pointed out, and that is the priest holding up their cameras.
Yeah.
And especially in the context of sacred space and sacred activities.
Yeah. Investments.
This isn't the rope line.
No.
And I tend to share the concern there. Of course, the Pope has very little to do with that. What does it tell you about American Catholic culture then?
I'm not going to blame Catholics for that. What does it tell us about American culture? That's what I was just trying to say. I mean, do we really think that life doesn't exist unless we get a photograph of it on our personal little God that we carry around in our pocket and seem to spend so much time worshiping?
Finally, then, how would you summarize so far? Because it's obviously far from over. And as you said, the second round of the Synod on Families is about to begin. How do you assess so far the media coverage of the Pope's swing through the U.S.?
Well, I think the most important thing is the issue of family itself. He had some very intriguing things to say, and I thought very sensitive and on point, about some of the greater threats to family right now, include the fact that how many students are so far in debt they can't afford to get married. How many young people assume that they have to live together cohabitation because they can't start a marriage because there's no economic prospects for them. He raised some really important issues for priests and bishops to stop and think about, and maybe even American politicians. If you're interested in the family, then by all means, let's look at some of the other threats to the family as well. I expect a lot of that in this Vatican Synod. I think that's his primary agenda. Are we pastorally helping real, live, married couples and their children and people who perhaps want to get married but don't feel they can or that they've given up? The dream of being married within a Catholic context, he thinks that has been tarnished, and I think he's going to go back there over and over. The degree to which he kind of refuses to discuss that in the context of homosexuality or same-sex marriages, I think the press will be severely disappointed with that, but I'm not expecting that to be a major issue in this Synod meeting. Maybe I'll be surprised, but I don't expect to be.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to review the movie Black Mass, the Johnny Depp movie. Apparently, the acting is fantastic, the story is intriguing, and it's about crimes that go unpunished. We'll be right back.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India.
Sweden.
Egypt. France.
Turkey. Japan.
Australia. Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong.
Austria.
Finland.
Malaysia.
Singapore.
Bulgaria.
Korea.
Brazil. You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines.
Mexico.
Spain.
New Zealand.
Kuwait.
Clear. Concise. Consistent. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.